week's edition of World Crisis Radio. This is Webster Tarpley reporting to you from Washington, D.C. And we're recording here. It's Tuesday, the 30th of December, getting down to the last days of the old year. So this program must therefore be seen as our first week in the new year edition. And that means 12th night. I believe that's January 5th. And our edition for Epiphany, the 6th of January. And of course, Epiphany is what we always aim at here, right? Every week of the year, we try to provide some striking, sudden realization of an important truth where you get to see into the essence of things. And that's our approach, and we hope to provide something this time. And here's our general concept. January 2015, and in particular the time leading up to January 25th, 2015, is, we must attempt to make it, a time of worldwide mass strike against the speculators, the zombie bankers and the hedge fund hyenas, and against their tools at the central bank. It's time to tax speculators. The 1% Wall Street sales tax, the 1% City of London sales tax, the 1% Frankfurt sales tax, the 1% yen speculating sales tax. You get the idea. It works everywhere. Cut the power of the finance oligarchs, the parasites, the usurers, and so forth, and restore a level playing field between physical production and financial speculation, right? And essentially dry out the derivatives plague by slapping a nice 1% tax on all derivatives transactions. As we pointed out last week, the Washington Post has estimated that there's about $300 billion too much going into Wall Street. That's probably about the take of a 1% Wall Street sales tax, at least initially. And then you see where it goes. So the mass strike, and you'll remember, as of June 2013, not this past year, 2014, but in June 2013, I was at the Left Forum in New York City, and I put out the perspective that there would be mass strike developments coming in 2015 in particular, on the model of the 1930s. That was the template we were working with. So now we see it's likely to happen. And in particular, it starts, of course, with Syriza, that the Greek reactionaries of the New Democracy Party, the Samaras, party, have failed to impose a reactionary austerity ghoul as president of Greece. This election takes place, of course, in the Greek parliament. It's on that kind of a model, but they have failed. They have not been able to get 180, 180, or now even 160 votes in the Greek parliament. So Greece will now vote, the cradle of civilization, on the 25th of January. All indications they will be voting for Alexis Tsipras and Syriza. That will already begin to blow the lid off the entire system, because Syriza, of course, is anti-austerity. It is anti-Troika, that is to say, anti-IMF, anti-European Central Bank, anti-European Commission. That would be, in particular, the new Olli Rehn, Moscovici, Monsieur Moscovici of the European Commission. They're against him. And they demand a renegotiation. It's going to be time for a mohawk. It's going to be time for a haircut on the creditors of Greece. They're going to get slashed one half. And if they get away with one half, they're going to be very lucky. I would do much worse. I would delete and shred all derivatives. I would wipe them out and not even discuss them. So Greece is obviously one element. And then we have Belarus, and of course behind Belarus, Russia, and somewhere in the mix, Venezuela is teetering on the edge of default. So, Greece, a new anti-austerity government, the political challenge. Belarus, capital controls, exchange controls being implemented. And there are even signs that Russia is going down the same path. And therefore Russia. Venezuela, the oligarchs are licking their chops. They think they're going to be able to loot the Citgo, the old city's service Citgo gasoline system, which gives free heating oil with the help of one of the Kennedy clan, as you've seen on TV, quite likely. So this is all adding up. We've got a contraction going on in the world. The price of oil continues to fall. As of today, West Texas Intermediate, $53.41. It's below $54. That's quite significant. That, of course, is dragging down the Russian ruble. The Russian ruble oscillated today, the 30th of December, last full trading day of the old year, between 58.92 to a dollar and 54.90 to a dollar. That's the Russian ruble exchange rate. And yesterday, of course, the 29th, the Russian ruble had a 7% fall. So the speculative attack by the Anglo-American zombie bankers, London and Wall Street, on the Russian ruble and the Belarus ruble and other currencies is continuing even as the world economy continues to contract. The big news on that front, oil, you've just heard it, oil well below $54 a barrel. Copper has now broken through some of its support levels. Copper is now headed down, down, down. And, of course, copper is a direct indication of how much building construction and other stuff is going on, especially in China, because copper is for wires. You want to build a building, you got to have copper wiring most likely, and copper is now not in demand. Iron ore remains at a long-term low. So lots and lots of raw materials, not necessarily all, but many of the most basic ones continue to go down. Inflation is not the issue anymore. Don't tell the libertarians, don't tell the poltards, because they think that hyperinflation is always right around the corner. What we seem to be seeing now is the beginning, or the continuation, it's not just beginning, of a phase of deflation. Or disinflation, as they say, when they don't want to scare you. So, let's look at Belarus now. Maybe we can come back to Greece in just a minute. And certainly we will. But Belarus, I think, is very newsworthy. There's a whole country to get to know, right? Belarus, hated by the Anglo-Americans, hated by Hillary Clinton, by Kerry. They call Lukashenko the last dictator in Europe. Well, bring it on. He is going to defend this country better than some neoliberal mushhead who would come in with IMF shock therapy and so forth. And I have proof of that here in just a minute. Lukashenko, as you know, last week he imposed a 30% fee, a 30% tax, if you will. You want to export capital out of Belarus. You want to change Belarus rubles into dollars, pounds, euros, yen. Wonderful. Pay a 30% tax. So that's one. And if you have money coming in, if you're an exporter, you've got to change half of that into Belarus rubles. Now, I'm looking here at the very interesting website, Belarusian News, Belarusian News, national source of news, BELTA. And we'll tell you what they're saying, but we'll be keeping tabs on them in the coming weeks and months. Back in a minute. Welcome back to World Crisis Radio. Now, you will have noticed the 25th of January, the Greek elections coming up. And that's going to be a very big day. That's going to be an anti-austerity, anti-IMF, anti-derivatives. It's actually anti-conditionalities. The Greeks call this memorandum. The memorandum is the memorandum concerning the IMF conditionalities that the Greek government accepted back under, if not Samaras, then previously under the PASOK. So this is a very bad thing. So this is going to be a turning point, I believe, in current history to come on top of the ones that we've just had in 2014. But you'll notice that our course in economics here, the 23rd, the 24th, and 25th, the Econothon in Washington, the Econothon will be the political economy of the American system, 23rd, 24th, 25th of January. And I have to ask for patience again. Between the Pinckney case and the holidays, we have not yet been able to sign the contract for the venue. So don't go out and buy a ticket quite yet. We're very confident that this will work, but I don't want to hurt anybody. So therefore, cool it for a little bit, and in the first week of the new year, at the latest, we'll have it. But it's likely to be 23rd, 24th, 25th of January, meaning that on the afternoon and evening of the 25th of January, we will be celebrating here the victory of Alexis Tsipras and of Syriza, the demise of the austerity ghouls of Greece, and from there, of course, radiating out from the Acropolis, where Plato, our main man, started his activity, we'll be seeing that the world will change. Changing already, certainly. The Belarus situation, once again, telling us how interesting all of this is. So first of all, the 30% tax on capital exports or changing, and the 50% obligatory support activity in favor of the Belarus ruble. Now here in the Belarusian news, B-E-L-A-R-U-S-I-A-N, it's only one S, news, we have an article by it's actually an interview with Alexander Zabarovsky. Alexander Zabarovsky, the head of the secretariat of the prime minister. And the prime minister, and I take it this is now the new one, which I think it certainly is, the newly named prime minister is Kabiaku, K-A-B-I-A-K-O-U. Prime Minister Kabiaku of Belarus. So we're hearing from Alexander Zabarovsky, his principal advisor. He's the head of the secretariat, I guess, the chief of staff. He's first deputy chief of the Council of Ministers office. Okay. So he says essentially that these measures have been successful. The first important effect of the decisions undertaken by the government and the National Bank was their ability to reverse almost immediately the plans of households and other holders of rubles, and to show the market that the yield on Belarusian ruble deposits will be higher than that of deposits in foreign currency. In the first half of December, people actively exchanged their Belarusian rubles for foreign currency without any solid reasons for doing so. This is a nice way of saying that London and New York were attempting to foment a panic, not just in the Russian ruble, but also in the Belarusian ruble. Because if you can destabilize Belarus and bring down Lukashenko with a color revolution, you can then push your NATO membership right deep into the historical heartland of Russia, right? If you got Minsk, you're practically at Smolensk, and you're well on your way to Moscow, right? Although there's many a slip, as has been discovered. Also very, very interesting, the proceeds from this tax will be added not for the polar bears, the penguins, or the snail darters, but to the treasury. It will help the budget situation. And how about this? All major banks in Belarus are introducing fixed-term safeguarded savings accounts. It sounds like a certificate of deposit, where Belarusian ruble deposits will be indexed to the exchange rate of the Belarusian ruble fluctuations. In other words, you've got a combination of the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation, which will guarantee your deposits, and you've got inflation protection, like one of those TIP bonds, right? TIP, inflation protected. These will now be inflation protected insured certificates of deposit, the way I read this article. And that was, this is all coming out of the decisions announced by Lukashenko on the 19th of December. Hey, the Anglo-Americans, though, were not happy. Here I have Navini.by, BY, Belarus. Navini, well, Novini in Ukrainian, Novosti in Russian, and Navini in Belarusian. So here we find that a number of the news sites coming out of Belarus were attacked by hackers on December 20th. So, what is it that the Anglo-Americans didn't want you to hear about these measures, I guess, and how significantly successful they have been? Now, we also want to pay attention to a policy statement here from the president of the country. And let's see if we can find it. Lukashenko says there must be no hoarding of foreign currencies, dollars, euros, pounds, yen. No hoarding of foreign currencies. He repeats that there is a state guarantee on deposits, that the wealth of the country is the economic strength of the country is located in its wealth, and in its currency, and in its reserves. Fine. He says that it is necessary to regulate commercial banks, that the, this is interesting, the central bank will be held responsible for the stability of bank credit. Now, this is because he has installed a new head of the central bank who is now on the hot seat, and this guy deserves to be on the hot seat. We'll have more in just a minute. World Crisis Radio. The man of the hour, President Alexander Lukashenko of Belarus, speaking out on plans to stabilize the economy. So this was, I guess, his year-end press conference. And sovereign strategy, the national and financial sovereignty strategy of Belarus and its currency will be based on national wealth, the country's currency reserves, and the gold reserves. Belarus should have no more shocks. State interests must prevail over corporate interests, meaning oligarchs, right? They have them too. No more shocks. State interests must prevail over corporate interests. And we want to be less dependent on other currencies. In other words, not simply in the orbit of the Federal Reserve, which even Russia continues to be. Credit has to be used for vitally important projects and to actuate existing business plans. He calls for the reducing of the dollarization of the economy. And again, if you have dollars, if they're coming in, you've got to sell half of them as soon as you get them. We need real efficient measures that will yield concrete results in the growth of deposits and credits in the national currencies. Among other interesting quotes, banks must support the state and not vice versa. Right on. Not the banks for the banks, but the banks for a national interest, which the government is better situated to judge than they are. Lukashenko also says, why is it that bank profits are so much higher than the profits of any other sector? That is abnormal. That has to end. He's also in the process of finalizing another nuclear reactor for Belarus. So they'll have guaranteed national nuclear energy, the cheapest, the safest compared to old reactors or coal mines or these other things. Therefore, this is a country that's on its way to assert sovereignty. It's not going to be rolled over. Now, interestingly enough, the liberals, the mushheads of Belarus are screaming. They're not happy. They're complaining that, of course, he purged the Lukashenko purged the cabinet last on the 19th when he started this whole thing. And here is a neoliberal from inside. This is called Belarus Digest. This is Brand X, right? These are the bad guys. And here we have Lukashenko reshuffles the government before 2015 election. So they try to say, this is not really economic. This is just that there's going to be a presidential election, and he always scapegoats the people by throwing them out in the year before the election. On 19th of December, the authorities had to make several urgent moves to prevent panic on the foreign currency exchange market following the dramatic slide of the Russian ruble. Lukashenko explicitly prohibited the devaluation of the Belarusian ruble, but demanded some measures to protect hard currency reserves. Now, here's the some of these people move from one area to another, but the most interesting, Andrei Kabiaku, we mentioned him, previously the head of the presidential administration, I guess it means chief of staff of the executive office of Lukashenko, has replaced Myasnikovich as prime minister. Kabiaku has extensive government experience, deputy prime minister 2000 to 2010, worked on the State Control Committee, Minister of Economics, Deputy Head of the Presidential Administration, Ambassador to Russia, well-connected in the Kremlin. Good. Now, these neoliberals that we see here, and here they start complaining. You have to pay attention if you want to understand the logic of the state apparatus in Belarus and the principles that govern it. The whole system works to guarantee the stability and security of the president's rule. Well, fine. Better that than Libya, wouldn't you say? And here we see the economic line that these neoliberals here want. This is actually the policy director of the Discussion and Analytical Society, Liberal Club of Minsk. So this is the whining coming from the Liberal Club of Minsk. The new people, he says, with one exception, they represent the same views that have dominated Belarusian policymaking over the last two decades. Massive state property, that is a well-developed state sector. No problem. Good thing, especially under these conditions. Government control over the economy. Well, dirigism. Administrative measures over market tools under crisis conditions. Of course. Pushing for as little reform as possible. Well, reform, of course, means, here's what he means by reform. Nothing appears to indicate that Lukashenko will allow the new government to launch structural reforms that international institutions like the International Monetary Fund or the European Bank for Reconstruction and Development, EBRD, that was supposed to be to renovate Eastern Europe after the fall of the communist regimes. You can see that there is a neoliberal opposition here in Minsk. Nobody escapes the presence of these characters, but it is a highly, highly interesting thing. So we're watching all of this with great interest, and above all, to what extent it's being followed or it's coordinated or otherwise tells us things about what's going on in Russia. Now let's take a look at this. According to Reuters on the 23rd of December, Christmas Eve Eve. I didn't get to this in time for the previous broadcast. I hadn't seen it. The ruble on that day, Russian ruble, no, this is a Russian ruble, hit its highest levels in 2 weeks, shored up by informal capital control measures designed to head off a repeat of the inflation and protests that marked Russia's 1998 financial crisis. Might as well call that the 1998 state bankruptcy and default on GKOs. So here is what we have. Putin has pledged not to resort to full-fledged controls. Well, let's see what we have in the terms of half-fledged controls. Economists say the measures were a softer version of capital controls. Here's what happened. The government has already forced government exporters to sell their dollars, and the same thing will happen for the banks. So in a sense, capital controls are already in place, says the renegade Sergei Guriev, an exiled economist who fled Russia after criticizing Putin. Medvedev said on Christmas Eve Eve, Russia risks deep recession. That's the same line coming from Kudrin. I don't know why Medvedev is still there if he's simply a playback agent for Kudrin. They have Standard & Poor's is fixing to attack. Standard & Poor's has put Russia's credit outlook on credit watch with negative implications preparatory to a downgrade. Kudrin says Russia will be downgraded to junk next year. We'll give you the details of these controls in just a second. Back in a minute on World Crisis Radio. Welcome back to World Crisis Radio. It's our Epiphany broadcast. We're looking forward to a mass strike upsurge in January, centered on the Greek elections on the 25th of January, an anti-IMF, anti-austerity, shock therapy. The government is likely to be elected in Greece. At the same time, Belarus is fighting the IMF with capital controls and exchange controls. And now let's see what Russia is doing. And they're already, what can we say, nudging exporters to sell dollars and other hard currency and buy rubles. That's a support operation for the ruble. Medvedev repeating that alarmist propaganda from Kudrin. What is this? And of course, the Standard & Poor's indicted in Italy, or some of them, one or two of the others, by our friend Michele Ruggiero. But those guys are impudently leading the charge. Now let's look at these unofficial controls. What do we have? On a Tuesday last week, the 23rd, the Russian government told large state exporting companies that by March 1st, they must bring their net foreign exchange assets back to the levels of October 1st. They have to report that to the central bank on a weekly basis. One government source says, well, you can keep hard currency if you want to, and you can speculate, but we reserve the right not to help you if and when you hit tough times. I probably ought to do that already. Vladimir Osakovsky from the Bank of America Merrill Lynch, imperialist, says, quote, if exporters are told not to increase their hard currency positions, that can be viewed as an unofficial reintroduction of capital controls. Hallelujah. Now, the other side of it would be, a banker says full capital controls would be a huge immediate blow. Standard & Poor's may be a worse blow. One source close to the government says there was panic last week. Something had to be done. We took some measures. The Russian Central Bank expects flight capital, hot money fleeing at $130 billion this year. And a lot of that comes out of the resources, the reserves of the country. Another source, as of Monday, December 16th already, currency controllers have been sitting in and monitoring the currency position of banks, checking who bought foreign currency. Well, then the FSB is looking down the over the shoulder of these parasitical speculators. We have to report to them all of our activities, finance ministry or central bank. They are very meticulous, said a source at one of the main banks. Tax payments are now falling due at around Christmas time. Remember, the big holiday there is still to come. It's New Year's. Gurdjieff, the renegade, I guess he says, I can imagine that for a while they will use these capital control-like measures without full-blown capital controls. But if depreciation continues, they may actually do this. Well, if they do, they will begin to smile broadly when they see the beneficial results. So, this is the course which Russia may take. This faction around Medvedev, Kudrin, Kasyanov, and so forth, they must be defeated. And instead, this other group, the Glazyev group, needs to affirm its supremacy and actually implement this stuff. Now, let's get back to the Greek case. We know, thanks to La Stampa of Turin and other sources, there were already under the table negotiations between Tsipras and Syriza on the one side and the powers of finance capital on the other. Finance capital here represented by Merkel and Schäuble. Merkel, the Chancellor of Germany, Schäuble, the finance minister. These are the austerity ghouls. It's amazing. They remember 1923. That was bad. They can't seem to remember 1929. And 1929 was worse, because 1929 brought you Hitler within 4 years, something that 1923 hyperinflation did not do. So hyperinflation is not as bad as super deflation. And that's what we're facing now, with no effective demand. This other guy's name, Jörg Asmussen. J-O umlaut, or sometimes J-O-E-R-G, Jörg Asmussen, A-S-M-U-S-E-N. I believe he is currently the labor minister of Germany, so he's accustomed to duping working people. So he's representing Draghi of the European Central Bank, Merkel or Schäuble, the money bags German government, and Moscovici, the financier, contact man for the European Commish in Brussels. So they're negotiating. That's wise. Notice, you're going to hear a lot of stuff. Syriza wants to leave the euro. Syriza is anti-Europe. Syriza wants the Grexit, the Greek exit. No, it's a lie. As La Stampa of Turin repeats, nobody but nobody in any position of power in Syriza has ever said they want to leave the euro. No. They say they want to have a London debt conference. This is the conference, we've talked about it before, in the early 1950s, when, for the benefit of Germany and other defeated powers, there was a haircut that the German debts, this ravaged and destroyed country, was going to get a debt holiday, a debt reduction, writing off a certain large amount of the debts. So that's what Syriza wants. They say, get rid of half of our debts. Give them a real haircut. And I would say, again, you should shed the derivatives before you do anything else, because that's the main source. So anybody who says that this is about the breakup of the euro is a liar, most likely on the British payroll, because, of course, the biggest enemy of the euro is the pound, the City of London. Anybody can see that. But, of course, our stupid libertarians, right, our cretinous anti-euro, of course, they're the horsemen of the apocalypse with 666. What a lot of malarkey. A lot of this stuff, again, is fomented by the British or by the dollar, of course, by the Federal Reserve. But it's simply nonsense. Now there's a very important point, because Syriza, always adamant, they want to stay in the euro and reform from the inside. The people who want to quit the euro are the right-wing racist reactionaries, people like Alternatives for Germany. In the last European election, the whole thing, the whole campaign of the Alternatives to Germany was kick out the Wogs, right? Kick out the Greeks, right? German term, Kanaken. So kick out the Southerners, kick out the Southeasterners even more, Greece, I guess. Kick out the Balkan peoples and get back to Europe. Well, that's ridiculous. So, again, the people who want to quit the euro are the reactionaries, right? They're the fakers. And there's also going to be an attempt to say, well, there's a rising tide of populism in Europe. And it goes from Alternatives for Germany to Marine Le Pen to this Farage, garbage, whatever his name is. No. As Tsipras has said, those right-wing populists are not the enemies of the system. They're not alternatives to the system. They are the reserve army of the system. They're the guts of the system defense. So don't mix it up. This is totally different. And I think also, to the extent that the Russian foreign ministry has been thinking, I guess, or concluding that right-wing racist populists might be somebody they can work with, they're going to say, no, you're going to be dragged back by an actual government, a Syriza government, Orthodox country, will tend to drag Russia back from this idiotic location with Le Pen and Farage. So back in a minute on this video. Welcome to the second hour of World Crisis Radio. It is once again our 12th night edition and epiphany coming up, the 6th of January. And we're looking forward to a world mass strike, triggered in particular by the victory of Syriza and Tsipras in Greece on the 25th of January. Some of you may be here taking that course we mentioned. You will be hearing about that. But that's the idea. But of course, a mass strike solves nothing. Leadership is needed. Who's going to intervene? Who's going to provide a program? Who's going to push aside the mushheads, the Occupy freaks who say, no, we don't want to have a program because we might win our demands and get co-opted. So what we have to do, though, now is pick up on our friend, Reverend Edward Pinckney. Let me just say before we go into our guest, Daniela Wall's contribution here, we attempted for this program to call the facility there in Michigan, Jackson, Illinois, in Jackson, Michigan, and we attempted to set up an interview with Reverend Pinckney, who does apparently have the right to and strictly limited but nevertheless existent communication with the outside world. We talked, or better yet, Genesis Communications Network, and I thank them for this, Genesis Communications Network, in the form of the distinguished producer of this show, talked to the warden, attempted to explain the problem of a radio station, which has to have a schedule, and couldn't Reverend Pinckney please be available at a specific time tonight? Oh, no, said the warden, we can't just set up a time like that. You sort of have to leave it open. It sounds like they expect that if Pinckney gets the call, that we have to be ready to answer him just about at any time, which we will try to do, but you can see what the difficulties are. It's obvious an attempt to sabotage the connections of, the communications of Reverend Pinckney with the outside world. But we have, fortunately, Daniela Walsh, who has talked with Reverend Pinckney quite a few times, I think more than anybody except for his wife, in the time that Pinckney has been incarcerated. So let's go to Daniela and get an update. Welcome, Daniela.
Hi, Webster. That's a real shame that you couldn't get through to Pinckney, because more than anything, he wants to be on your show. And I know he was looking forward to that. If they're not going to make an appointment with you, then that means that he can only call out one call a day between 3 and 10 minutes. So I don't know how we're going to work this out, but I'm going to speak for him today. So let's get into this. Now's the time we should be most active, and I stress the need for international action to publicize this case more than we ever have. Now is the time to fight. if you believe that on December 15th, Pinckney's case was decided or the sentence was final, it is not. If you find yourself somehow in a place of mourning instead of fighting, then you are misguided right now. Pinckney's final sentence is not until January 15th. So now is the time to fight. Governments should protest to the United States, call in their U.S. ambassador and say, we protest what you are doing. You are violating the Helsinki Accords of 1975. You are violating the OSCE civil rights provisions. Reverend Pinckney is on the United Nations radar. He met with the United Nations, if you remember, their officials a few months back. Reverend Pinckney is an internationally recognized spokesperson for this Michigan anti-austerity movement. At this time, we must make sure that the name of Berrien County is never idle on Google, even for a day. This goes. This is the same for Twitter, for hashtag Berrien County, hashtag Michigan, and hashtag Free Pinckney. No matter where you are or how small your town is, I guarantee you that there is a radical journalist in your area who wants to write an article about Reverend Pinckney. Report to me on Facebook, Daniela G. Walls, or at taxwallstreetparty@gmail.com about what articles you get. This way I can have activists make positive comments on your article and share it. Make sure we're also trying to catalog all articles for Banco. Make sure you as an individual have commented on all existing Pinckney articles. If the article happens to be a hit piece, like the one that was written by the Heritage Foundation, we've said in other episodes they're bringing out their big guns against Pinckney, and that says a lot, then reprimand their conclusions appropriately in keeping with your conscience. And if it is a positive article, thank the journalist appropriately. Make sure you have commented yourself on each existing article and fight to get your own. From prison, Pinckney has renewed his appeal to all of you to keep up the activism. Pinckney appeals to all people of goodwill to take up this case, pursue it, publicize it, complain, bring it to people's attention, word of mouth, Twitter, social media, protesting, phone calls. Write a letter to Reverend Pinckney and tell him what you are doing and have done. Imagine yourself in solitary in a jail cell. He wants action reports from active individuals. For example, an action report would be something like, my name is, and your state, location, so far, and then you would write something like, so far I have organized with my local name, the activist collective, spoke about and passed out flyers describing your case or the case of Free Pinckney. I have gotten articles in XYZ newspapers. I have organized X amount of donations to bhbanco.org. I have gotten this far with my foreign embassy, etc. Tell Pinckney what you have done. These are action reports. He is alone, like I said, in a cell and cut off from communication and needs action reports from you. The address to write to Reverend Pinckney will be posted at freepinckney.wordpress.com. and at bhbanco.org, but I'll give it just once. Edward Pinckney is the first line, E-D-W-A-R-D Pinckney. Second line, prisoner number, so number sign, prisoner number 294671, 294671. Next line, G, period, Roberts, R-O-B-E-R-T-S, Cotton, C-O-T-T-O-N, reception center. Next line, 3855 Cooper Street. 3855 Cooper Street, C-O-O-P-E-R. Next line, Jackson, comma, Michigan, J-A-C-K-S-O-N, comma, Michigan, 49201. Reverend Pinckney appeals to you. He makes this special New Year's Eve Christmas holiday epiphany appeal to you. Jay Witten from our Russian local reports that important Russian journalists that are close to the Russian Foreign Ministry and Foreign Minister Lavrov are being briefed. They are interested in the case. Stay tuned next week. I will have more information on how our work in Russia is shaping up. We have about half the states mobilized, connected with their local civil rights and other interested local activist organizations, drawing parallels between their communities and the case of Reverend Pinckney to use Free Pinckney as an example of what might happen in their community and state while mobilizing to help Pinckney now. I need to go through a calendar of the case. Judge Shirok and the prosecutor Mike Sepik have not yet responded to our sentencing brief. Pinckney's final sentence, where Judge Shirok has the power to throw out the sentencing or ask for a retrial, is on January 15th. This will be decided by Chirac, who has tremendous discretion in matters before the court, including sentences. Sentencing. Our lawyers have their job, but we have to consider our role as activists. It is important now whether Chirac considers Reverend Pinckney to be a bigger threat in prison or out. If the international spotlight is on Berrien County with critical articles and press about Berrien County, then by January 15th, Judge Chirac may have to say to himself, this is not only not going to go away, but it's going to get worse. Most lawyers tend not to be big believers in activists, activism, but part of Free Pinckney is that we are activists, and Reverend Pinckney is an activist. We can never let the lawyers get us so paranoid that we become immobile. Some people feel that writing to the judge is not a good idea, and some say it is a good idea. We say it is absolutely necessary. If Judge Chirac gets the idea that we have backed off in any way, then he will feel that he can do whatever he wants in his own that vacuum that exists there.
Hang on, Daniela. We'll get you back here in the next segment. Hold that thought. Back in a minute on World Crisis Radio. Here we are with our Epiphany edition of World Crisis Radio. We're getting an excellent rundown on the situation of Reverend Edward Pinckney, now in jail in Jackson, Michigan, and efforts to free him, focusing in particular on the 15th of January, when there is going to be the final sentencing, as far as we can tell from the court calendar docket for this court. So, Daniela, please continue.
Okay, yeah, December 15th was not the final sentencing. We are looking to January 15th. And right now it's important to figure out how we can affect Judge Chirac's mindset. If Judge Chirac gets the idea that we've backed off, then we... Like I said right before the break, he'll feel that he can do whatever he wants in a vacuum. We can't let that happen. If you are a lawyer or you are friends with a lawyer, make your friend that's a lawyer write a letter. Letters from lawyers are extremely important. If you know a judge, that's great too. But those are going to affect him the most. As you recall, he tended to belittle our letters, saying they were from activists, and we want to really get him this time with a bunch of legal letters. There's a bunch of points I'm going to bring up in a second about what he's done that appears to be illegal from outside counsel. Just like Judge Chirac said during Pinckney's initial sentencing on December 15th, he said he's going to make an example out of you. He said this publicly. We need to take Judge Chirac's words and do the same thing, make an international example of Benton Harbor. It's important to make an international example. No matter where you are in this country, there are activist groups in your area. I've gotten a couple messages that read, I'd like to help, but my area is a wasteland, no press, no organizations. Granted, these were isolated areas by comparison, but I Googled those towns with the words either that town plus activism or that town plus civil rights, and in both cases, 50 to 100 organizations came up with pro bono civil rights law firms, to occupy groups that still meet up, to smaller activist newspapers. There's no excuse for any individual listening to your show today not to get at least one piece of local press and organize or ally with a group of local activists around the case of Pinckney. And as we know, Pinckney represents much of our American problems and corruptions. If you study the case, please make it, again, your job to effectively learn how to articulate this case and sell it to press in your area. We still need activists to write letters to the judge that say, how can you sentence a man with no evidence? And we know that on December 15th, this was a packed jury. You can bring up the case of Gail Freeling. And like I said, we need press. Whirlpool is actively trying to sabotage support for Pinckney by running their own hit pieces. They have pulled in their big guns. We have people who are active. But if you're not, then I suggest you get, you know, a little less YouTube and a little more actions. Pinckney needs donations. Sorry. Pinckney needs donations. We need money to Banco to build an appeal fund and hire a Michigan bar-certified appellate lawyer and the $6,000 court transcript. We didn't expect the court transcript to be this much, but it's going to be $6,000. So our current goal at bhbanco.org is $20,000. But this can be done because it's not just our organization. There's a lot of organizations mobilized, including Banco. And it's your job to try to get donations from civil rights organizations in your area, even if it's $5 from each person. Bundle that. Bundling is the key. And get that money to Banco. And then write a letter to Reverend Pinckney and say, I've bundled this much money and I've organized with this group. Can I need to interrupt you for a second, Webster, to let everybody know that there's going to be a class. You might have covered this, but I just want to cover it from our Tax Wall Street Party. We are hoping for the weekend of Friday the 23rd of January, Saturday the 24th, and Sunday the 25th, because people are preparing to book tickets. So stay tuned to Webster's Twitter for the final date and venue address, and we will also post it on all of our party Twitters, Facebook pages, and maybe you could post it on tarpley.net. We need
sure thing.
For this venue. And I think the time has come, Webster, for party dues. It's been a couple of years and we haven't asked. And the dues are going to be $20 per person per month. This will cover all the wonderful intelligence that comes from you and action from us, meaning we presented that wildly successful C-SPAN Russian Fleets talk. But at that time, we had to scramble to come up with the money to pay for the appropriate venue. And now we are behind for money to pay for the location for your class, and there are fees that we need to pay for everything, and instead of scrambling last minute, we've got tons of expenses on our end for Pinkney and just everything, and stuff is going to consistently come up, so we're going to need consistent party dues. This way we can do more and give you more, and to do this, please go to the taxwallstreetparty.org, and on the right side, you'll see a PayPal button. You can make a $20 payment, and then you press the recurring monthly button. And this is probably the best investment that you can make pound for pound and head for head. We are doing a lot, and we'd like to do more, but we are unable to do more unless we have some foundation. So please consider making a recurring payment to the Tax Wall Street Party. And we are working on all the I can tell you all the legal work we're doing now if you'd like me to keep going.
A brief summary would be good. Let's go to the end of the segment.
Okay, so here's a legal brief, and there's going to be some legal language here. But we've asked the judge, and we've been pressuring Berrien County, to ask them if it's legal that Pinkney is in prison so far away from counsel before the judge responded to the sentencing brief. The sentence is not final, so why is Pinkney in prison? The final sentencing is scheduled for January 15th. We filed a sentencing brief that said Gail Freeling was friends and work colleagues with members of the prosecution. Gail worked with both Sharon Tyler and Sheriff Paul Bailey. When Reverend Pinkney's jury was seated, each member was asked under oath if they knew anybody on the prosecution to cover the topic of what it means to know the prosecution. Several questions were asked, including things like, do you know any members of the law enforcement community? Gail Freeling, on record and under oath, answered no to each question she was asked about knowing the prosecution. Then it turns out, with a simple Google search, that Gail Freeling's work history, she not only worked with the members of the prosecution for many years, she's friends with them on Facebook, etc. She's closely tied to the prosecution. So thus, Gail Freeling has now retained an attorney for herself because of all this, because she lied under oath. And the whole point of what I'm saying is that this information about Gail Freeling makes this a packed jury and is enough to force a retrial, at which point we would insist on taking the trial out of corrupted Berrien County. However, we are assuming that the judge is going to try to dismiss our sentencing case. So what's the second thing we have to do to make him not dismiss our sentencing brief is that we have to make sure that the prosecutor, Mike Sepik's arguments against our sentencing brief and motions related to juror misconduct will be public. Our goal is to make sure that on January 15th, final sentencing, that is public with Reverend Pinkney in attendance with his counsel.
Okay, so the sentencing, that's a very important point. The sentencing on January 15th must not be behind closed doors, but public. Daniela, we thank you very much. We're looking forward to hearing from you again next week. Thank you very much for an excellent overview.
You too. I'll be here. Bye-bye.
And Happy New Year. Welcome back to World Crisis Radio. Webster Tarpley here in Washington, D.C., our 12th night Epiphany New Year's edition. It's just a couple of things left over, loose ends from the previous coverage concerning the Lukashenko reshuffle of the entire Belarus government. We have the interesting fact that Pavel Kalavur, K-A-L-A-V-U-R, has replaced Nadzeja Ermakova as the chair of the National Bank. This guy is a banker, 2010 to 2014, headed a commercial bank, was 17 years deputy chairman of the National Bank. Now, when we look at this neoliberal website, we are told that Cavalier is the only free marketeer of the group. Now, I don't know how, we're just learning, we're just finding our way in Belarus politics, but I would guess that an experienced politician like Lukashenko would want to put Cavalier as the pro-market banker for show, right? He's there as camouflage. And anything goes wrong, Cavalier will be shown to be responsible. So I don't think that might be something worrisome, but I think Lukashenko, we have to assume he knows very much what he's doing with an extremely sensitive position. The other one is in the Syriza program. One of the things they're saying now is that they promise Merkel and Schäuble a real tough crackdown on tax evasion. In other words, rich oligarchs illegally exporting money, flight capital by parasites and speculators. I hope they don't forget about Steve Forbes. Steve Forbes was over there at the worst point in the Greek crisis, and the word was he was trying to privatize the Parthenon into his own grubby hands. So that's the kind of thing that could go on. Now, we're going to face a fight which in this country is going to be defensive. I'm sorry. In Greece, it's offensive. In Belarus, it's offensive. And in Russia, it's advance and retreat. But in this country, you might have seen Larry Kudlow, the former cocaine addict, on CNBC the 29th of December. And he says, why is it that all these people refuse to join the labor force? We've got to force them to join the labor force. We've got to cut benefits. We've got to shred the social safety net. Kudlow, how about offering them a decent wage? You want to get somebody to work in your free market? You talk free market all the time. You have a free market creed. Well, offer a better wage. Maybe somebody will come forward. Enough with the coolie wages. Enough with the anti-American, anti-historical low wage economy. Don't get the government to force people back out onto the street by destroying the benefits that they've paid for many times over. And now this is now the Republicans. You can't believe it. This is now a statement by Republican austerity ghouls. And this, we want to get kick off the new year with a bang. These Republicans, every last one of them, all the new Republican senators have signed a statement where they pledge to vote to eliminate the food stamps program. This is worse than Ron Paul. You'll remember Ron Paul at the end of 2011 put out a program for genocide against the American people. He wanted to cut food stamps by 62-63%. Here it goes, eliminate. So from Pellagra Paul to Genocide Gardner or Joni Ernst. Unbelievable. So here's what they say. Small business and the American people cannot afford President Obama's countless new regulations and tax increases. I don't know which. There's a right way and a wrong way to improve our welfare system, and his policies are not working. We need to put poor people first and lower costs. Now listen to this. How do you put poor people first? I guess in the line going into the gas chamber. Quote, the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, SNAP, is an overreaching federal program. My God, Bob Dole is the author. It's an overreaching federal program that has actually worsened the nutritional standards in this nation and increased costs. I am one of the millions of Americans who wish this program would end. To make matters worse, SNAP benefits are discouraging full-time job creation. We need to repeal the SNAP program and replace it with more affordable free market solutions. What those are, they have no idea. This comes from Senator-elect still David Perdue. And let's remember who they are. Cory Gardner of Colorado, David Perdue of Georgia. I hope it's Les Illusions Perdues. David Perdue, P-E-R-D-U-E. Joni Ernst, remember her, 9mm. Tom Tillis, reactionary from North Carolina. Tom Cotton, Manchurian candidate. James Lankford of Oklahoma. Steve Daines, Montana. Mike Rounds of South Dakota. Shelley Moore Capito and of West Virginia, Ben Sass of Nebraska. And remember that Sass and Cotton are somehow a tandem of Manchurian candidates that may be directed towards higher, greater things. Newly elected Republican senators sign pledge to eliminate food stamp program in 2015. How many would die? Because we know it's 45 to 50 million people get food stamps. The local economies in many places depend on food stamps because of the incompetent, parasitical ruling class that doesn't create jobs. They call them job creators. Well, where are those jobs, finally? Well, all I can say is see you in Nuremberg, Republican newly elected senators, and we see what you're doing. We will not forget. So that means we're going to have to fight back on this. Now remember, the likely areas, immigration. The xenophobes would like to roll that back, right? Start deportations once again. Tax reform, of course, from the Republicans, it means more tax cuts for the rich. Trickle-down economics, if you're lucky. Free trade, Trans-Pacific Partnership, the giant sucking sound. The Obamacare obviously attacked that. Food stamps, you just heard it. This is going to be a fight. But the problem is, you can't sit there and let an oligarch attack you according to his timetable. You've got to knock him off balance, right? General MacArthur didn't sit in Australia waiting for the Japanese to attack. He thrust forward into New Guinea and knocked them off balance and kept them off balance from then on. Now let's look at some other issues. Our hats are off to the Pope. Pope Francis has outdone himself here in the Christmas season. After pushing Obama to open to Cuba, and we talked about that, the way you hope for a liberalization or a loosening of police state controls is through greater prosperity. In the case of the German Democratic Republic, DDR, it was the Leipzig trade fair, Leipziger Messe. The people who came into that meant that Leipzig became the starting point for the downfall of the East German communist regime. Back in a minute on World Crisis Radio. Welcome back to World Crisis Radio. It's already our last segment here on the Epiphany edition. Pope Francis, in his the Midnight Mass in St. Peter's on Christmas Eve, in the Urbi et Orbi address to the world and the city on Christmas Day, and also in calls to Kurdish refugees, he called the Kurds and he said, "You remind me of Christ. For him there was no room at the inn, and for you there's also no room at the inn." Thanks to the machinations of NATO, Saudis, Turkey, Qatar, you know the list. Pope Francis did a regular anti-ISIS campaign. It's interesting to note he does not do this for Ukraine. He does not commit his prestige to those dubious characters from Lvov, let's say. He does not go out on a limb for them. But for Syria, he does. For the Melkites, the Maronites, the Chaldeans, the Copts, and many others. In his Urbi et Orbi, he attacked the brutal repression going on in Iraq and Syria. The brutal repression by ISIS is what it means. And he also recalled the situation of the Palestinians. It's interesting to note that Mahmoud Abbas, the president of the Palestinian Authority, had appeared at the midnight mass in Manger Square, Bethlehem, to take part in a Christian Latin high mass in that setting, right? No U.S. network that I could see reported that, but it was on one of the international cable channels. Pope Francis is also in the Urbi et Orbi, particularly talked about the contemporary Herods. Will, take a look at tarpley.net. You'll see that in the program 2 weeks ago, I believe, I indicated that Prince Bandar was a new Herod. And, well, and then the Pope talks about the new Herods. So there may be some convergence on that idea. The new Herods, in my opinion, Bandar of Saudi Arabia qualifies as a new Herod. Netanyahu of Israel, a new Herod. Erdogan of Turkey, certainly a new Herod. And ISIS Tsar Allen, a super Herod. And these are the people tormenting. And the 28th, yesterday, the day before yesterday, the Holy Innocents, right? The massacres that have gone on. Well, Allen gets himself into that league. In the homily of the Mass the night before, he talked about, this was broadcast live on NBC. The people who walked in darkness will see a great light, the darkness of war and oppression. But he also points out not the rich, not the powerful, not these others will be leading the way. So this adds up to, I think, a tremendous effort. And again, our hope remains that Pope Francis will pull Obama out of the clutches of Allen, the ISIS czar, who we want out. We're still hoping for, how about we couldn't get Allen out for the Latin Christmas. Let's get Allen fired for the Orthodox Christmas. I think that takes us up to what, the 6th or 7th of January. We'll look it up. You look it up too. The Orthodox Christmas, the Russian Christmas, the Greek Christmas is going to be at least another week away. And so there's still a chance to fire Allen for Christmas, the new Herod. So that's all going on. And we hope for the best. Now, concerning the stuff with the New York City police, my uncle was a New York City cop. So I'm not against the New York City cops, but here's what I would say. When you have a modern state, you must have civilian supremacy. Civilian supremacy over the armies, military forces, and over the police. Police and army and other military forces must obey the legitimate, legally elected executive. And this turning backs or making public demonstrations of political rancor against de Blasio. De Blasio is a scoundrel. I know that better than anybody, but this is a wrong path. This is Weimarization, huh? You take a look at the Berlin and Prussian police in the Weimar years, and you'll see that they were politicized completely, and sometimes good, but often also bad. So here's what I would say. I was watching Fox News the other day, and here comes this guy, one of their commentators. He came over from CNBC. Essentially, the argument from Fox News is that de Blasio has lost the confidence of the police and therefore has to resign. My God, do the police elect the mayor? Do the police impeach the mayor? This is monstrous. The police have no ability to elect or impeach or oust a mayor. The mayor is elected by the people. In this case, a fairly substantial majority. Oh, but it was a low turnout. That doesn't matter, Republicans. How about Bush? You never heard that about Bush. But the point is, de Blasio right now is the legal mayor, and this stuff about mounting a political protest at a funeral, this is awful taste. This is a monstrosity. Now, we're told by people close to the pulse of the Big Apple. Part of this is contract talks. Now, here already our attitude changes. If you're a cop and you want a decent wage from de Blasio, we're all for it. Stick to that. Stick to that. Don't mix the contract talks left over from Bloomberg and Giuliani and other union busters. Don't mix that with these tragic shootings. And we're also told that this demagogue Lynch, Pat Lynch, the demagogue who's currently the head of the Patrolman's Benevolent Association, I'm sorry, this guy has to be out, but he's up for re-election in January, and he's trying to out-demagogue his own right-wing opposition. But you get the idea. Back off and fight your contract battle. You're going to have wide support. But don't mix in the idea that somehow de Blasio is responsible for murder. This is absolutely ridiculous. And there has to be police reform. That is clear, but it doesn't have to be vindictive. It would simply go together with winding down the so-called war on drugs, right, which has gone way too far. The other thing, of course, is we have to sympathize with the police to this degree. There is an unjust order of property in this country. It's unjust, it's unequal, it's unfair, it's delegitimized, and nevertheless, they have to represent this and defend it. Some of them like defending it. Those are the bad apples. And some of them are embarrassed that they have to defend it. And that makes them even more sensitive. So you get the idea. We have a couple of other things, right? Navalny has been taken into custody in Moscow. And, well, that's probably not the worst thing. Anyway, we'll leave that up to the Russian government. What else can we add here? We're going to be looking this year at the possible orientation of U.S. politics of Jeb Bush against Hillary Clinton. This is awful. We'll have to look into this. Who's the alternative? Bernie Sanders on the Democratic side? Jim Webb? Well, maybe there'll be more than one web in the picture. Who knows? But this is awful. So it's time to think already now how to avoid such a situation. So to sum it up, we got a worldwide economic contraction. That's why the price of oil is going down, the price of copper, the price of iron ore. All the basic things are falling. Deflation would seem to be upon us. In the middle of that, you've got Russia under attack with these sanctions, under attack with the speculative runs on the ruble. They've got to defend themselves using dirigistic methods. Same thing with Belarus. Greece is fighting to break out of the austerity straitjacket. And indeed, the reason you've got this contraction is because there's no demand. And there's no demand because of austerity in Europe, the sequester in the U.S., and similar measures all around the world. So we know what to do. We have the program. Stay tuned to World Crisis Radio. We will fight our way out of this depression. See you next week.